Welcome to The Art of Construction, the podcast dedicated to helping you grow your business. Together, we'll explore the world of construction with some of the best minds of the industry. Your host, Devin Tilley, a micro-influencer and sometimes disruptor, will take you on a journey that will lead your business to the next level.
What's up, Art of Construction Tribe? Devin Tilley here, and I'm so excited for this conversation around demystifying EPCM. This main message, engineering, procurement, and construction management as an efficient delivery method. We're going to talk about the criticality of pre-construction, and as I always talk about, begin with the end in mind. And with Genesis, their services, their main sector is all about life sciences, and I really want to unpack that and ask some questions, and how it's going to benefit us is that we can really take a fully integrated EPCM approach. That's what we're going to be talking about today. So we have the pleasure of having in the Studio Art of Construction today, Tom Hughes, the Vice President of Construction Operations at Genesis AEC. He is going to be talking through all of these great stuff. So my perspective is asking him to share some specific examples, because I raise my hand and say EPCM, I want to learn more about it, but I want to go down the specifics and on a project in the pharmaceutical industry and talk with him about highlighting some of the key benefits that were realized, as we always talk about, learn by doing. And Tom is going to share some of the things on the 44X project and why it's important to begin with the end in mind. And as the riches in the niches, beginning with the end in mind, there's a lot of acronyms, so I may have to unpack some of that. And Tom and I on the pre-interviews talked through that a little bit. So without further ado, let's pop the top, grab or learn about Tom's favorite beverage, and have as much as fun as possible. Lock and load, tribe. Tom, welcome to the show. What's your favorite beverage?
Hey, what's happening, Devin? Glad to be here. Hello, everybody. My favorite beverage, I think that's a pretty easy one. Most people who know me know that I'm an IPA guy. I love a nice hazy IPA. Nice. Don't need to call any specific brand unless you've got sponsors that you want to talk to. We've got plenty of good micro brews here in the Philadelphia region.
What's one in Philly on the East Coast, guy? We're in Denver and learning when we travel around. What's one of the local ones that comes to mind for you?
So some of the bigger ones, you got, you know, Victory, Yards. Some friends of mine operate one called Broken Goblet, which is got some really good beer.
Awesome. Tell us about
an interesting story how they got that name.
All right, now we have to hear it. What's the story?
Well, it used to be they had a club. It was called Brutal Brewing, and somebody else already had that name. And when they figured that out, the one guy got mad and he was drinking from a goblet. He threw it down, smashed it into pieces. And then they were like, oh, well, I think we've got our new name. It's Broken Goblet.
I love that. I love unpacking the who and the what. Good stuff, man. Tom Hughes, tell us about the favorite place you traveled.
So I've had the fortune of being able to travel to a lot of different places throughout my career. So I've been lucky enough I traveled to Sweden, and I was in Stockholm for about 5 months, which was awesome, amazing place. And just recently, I was in Japan for 10 days in Tokyo, which that was one of the coolest large metropolitan areas I've ever been to. I really liked it in Tokyo, but I didn't get to do those things with my family. With my wife, I've traveled to Costa Rica, where we went, and we actually went and saw Weezer and the Foo Fighters play in concert while we were there. It was sort of an event for my 40th birthday, which was awesome. And recently we just took our kids, so it was a whole family vacation. We took the family to Disney World, and it was a complete surprise to the kids. They thought they were going to school. We told them, hey, we're going to Disney World, and got them on a plane. It was their first time ever being on a plane. They, you know, kind of lost their mind for a couple hours there. But that was a really fun family trip. But love to travel. And I've, through my career, I've been fortunate enough to be able to travel to a lot of places, including where you are out in Denver, Colorado.
Awesome. And it sounds like that maybe your passions all align, but what is your favorite hobby or passion outside of the construction silos we're going to talk about breaking down that we passionately call the art of construction?
So, you know, I'm pretty much like what you would consider a regular dude. I love sports. Being from Philly, I know a lot of you guys think that us Philly sports fans are pretty rough. We're just passionate. So I love, you know, I grew up playing sports. I love to play golf. I belong to Yardley Country Club here. Shout out to my my Venmo brothers and the group of guys that I golf with. I just generally like to have fun. You know, I'm always up for anything.
Good stuff, man. Well, it's an honor to have you here, Tom. Let's have as much fun as possible. What is your story that led you to being the VP of Construction Operations at Genesis AEC?
Yeah, so somewhat of a straight line. I didn't stray too far off of any original path to get here. You know, I grew up, my father was a mechanical contractor. He has his own business, and through high school and college, I went to Drexel University, which is an engineering school out in Philadelphia. And I worked for my dad, you know, in the summers. I worked for my dad while I was at school. And I was, you know, essentially, you know, learned the sheet metal trade. You know, when it came time to pick a career path, you know, I decided I was going to go to Drexel University and become a mechanical engineer with the hopes of one day, you know, joining forces with my dad and kind of being like a design build type firm. I went, after I graduated, I started working for one of our competitors. And I was started there as a mechanical engineer. After, you know, about 5 years, I decided that I didn't want to just sit behind a desk and do calculations and drawings. I wanted to be out in the field. After about 5 years of being a mechanical engineer, I decided that I didn't really want to, you know, just sit at a desk all day and do calculations and create drawings. What I wanted to do was be out in the field. So I changed roles, and I was an engineering coordinator for construction. So I was the main conduit between the AE team and the construction team, working as a field engineer. But I got my hands involved in all of the different disciplines, whether it was structural, mechanical, electrical. I got exposed to all the different disciplines. And from there, I moved into, you know, after I had done a handful of projects in that role, I decided, look, I wanted to be in construction full time. It made sense. I grew up in construction. And it was a sort of a change for me where, you know, I talked to my father and said, look, I don't want to be just a mechanical engineer. I kind of want to manage all of the construction. And so at my previous company, I made the jump to the construction management group. They were a firm very similar to us, where they had architecture, engineering, construction management. And I did that for another, you know, 7 years over there. And then about 10 years ago, I came here to Genesis, and I started at Genesis as a senior project manager on the construction side. You know, throughout my career, I've worked in not only engineering construction, but also commissioning, which is, you know, after the design and construction is complete, the commissioning group comes in and they ensure that everything's built and functioning per the contract documents and specifications. So you get to, you know, you get involved in the execution of the workings of what's being installed. So, you know, having had all of that experience, coming into Genesis as a senior construction manager, That experience allowed me to kind of manage bigger projects, understand where everybody comes from. Again, at Genesis, we're an AEC firm. We got architects, engineers, construction managers. We have commissioning. Having had the experience of working in a lot of those realms, it was easy for me to communicate across all the disciplines. So that kind of helped me, you know, move along in my career. I went from a senior PM to a project executive. We did a large portfolio of projects for our biggest client. And through that success, I was able to then, you know, springboard to the position that I'm in now, which is a vice president of construction operations.
Awesome. Well, what a great story of like you've been learning by doing, and honored to have you as a true master facilitator, where you talk about really connecting the field to the office, of like wearing the hat of in the office and in the field and putting those two things together. This is our second time having Genesis on the podcast, show 295, where we talked about building envelope practice. We're going to really niche in on the main focus of the company, but any updates from Genesis, if we'll put it in the show notes, if someone wants to go back and listen to the conversation around building envelope enclosures.
Well, so unfortunately, Alan has moved on from Genesis. He kind of went in a little bit of a different direction. He had a really good opportunity, and you know, we wished him nothing but the best for that. Sure. But our building envelope practice is still going on. We still have that service on our design side. It's actually going to be one of the specialties in another service that we're rolling out, which is a focus on sustainability.
Cool.
And that's to help, you know, our clients, the pharma and biotech companies, achieve, you know, their net zero goals. You hear a lot about, sure, you know, the net zero sustainability. Everybody wants to get away from carbon emissions and, you know, going from steam to electricity. So there's, you know, we're helping them with those sustainability goals.
Good stuff. So I want to start this conversation with you. Give us the overview of what EPCM is all about for people like me who are not living that day to day of like this alphabet soup of putting it all together.
Yeah, sure. And, you know, it's even a little more than EPCM. EPCM is kind of like the condensed version of the alphabet soup that we're talking about, because we've EPCM, you know, is engineering, procurement, and construction management. But within engineering, we're architecture and engineering and procurement and pre-construction and construction management and commissioning and validation and asset management services. But, you know, putting AECMCQVAMS on a, you know, on a business card or at the end of an email address gets a little bungled.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And that's why we've launched the Master Facilitator community that you talked about, like working with all the people, being able to put on those different hats. But, you know, putting this construction together of demystifying EPCM is really what we want to unpack today. And you taking those acronyms and kind of expand on those and then kind of niche in on like how you're successfully doing that.
Really what we focus on is giving our clients, you know, sort of one person, one kind of head of the spear, one neck to strangle, maybe is a good way to put it. You know, where we have the full service of architect, engineer, construction manager, commissioning agent. So taking a project from cradle to grave, you know, from initiation, you know, helping them come up with the business case for moving forward with a project, and taking it all the way through to startup, turnover, validation, and even, you know, I mentioned asset management services. That's we have a lab equipment group that, you know, after we build and commission a facility, they're assisting the end users with purchasing their equipment, moving them in, getting them set up to start up. And
so you mean it's important that the building works for the client that had you built it after it's built?
Yeah. Very important to make sure.
Well, the life cycle, right? You saw cradle to grave. I like to say cradle to cradle, or the customer care wheel through the master facilitators of like which handoffs, you know. And you, I love it how it's misleading, but you have to figure out how to communicate to properly represent the owners or the customers, your partners. That's what, as the VP, that's what you're doing now from those different partners from within Genesis, right?
Yeah, right. And it's important to, you know, our experience within the world of life sciences helps them. You know, we're fluent in their language, so we can help them communicate. And we understand the regulatory issues that need to be adhered to. We understand the way their labs are supposed to be laid out. You know, it's not, we're not just, you know, kind of building a strip mall. You know, we've got sophisticated facilities with a lot of regulations and a lot of standards that need to be adhered to, that it's not just something that anybody can do.
Love it. So I want to kind of hit on, now that we've set the stage of like, you've learned by doing a true master facilitator in this life cycle, in your experience, what are some of the common misconceptions or misunderstandings that companies have about EPCM, and how do you address them through Genesis?
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the biggest ones, and I think that we see this all the time, and it's whether it's from the, you know, the owner's project management team or the owner's procurement team or their own, you know, kind of draconian procurement methodologies, sure, is we need to have the architect separate from the engineer, separate from the builder, separate from the commissioning, yeah, so that, you know, they can't all be in cahoots together and they can't hide things from us. You know, it's in the world that which we live in, our job is to bring the facility up to operations as quickly as possible in an effort to help them with speed to market. So you can't hide anything. If any, you know, any of the sins that you try and bury at any point along that life cycle, they're going to get exposed towards the end. So, you know, if something's not installed correctly in construction, commissioning is going to find that out. And it's going to, you know, it eventually is going to come out. So by having the team as a cohesive team all under one roof, you know, we're working together to eliminate those things, find them before they become problems down the line. And there's no blame game, you know, there's no finger pointing.
Yeah.
Now there may be internal finger pointing where we're trying to figure out what went wrong, but at the end of the day, we're trying to make it, you know, make it right as quickly as possible. It doesn't behoove us to drive things or to drag things out. You know, whether it's we found a, you know, an issue with a design or something in construction wasn't installed correctly, or, you know, whatever the case may be, we're acting as a team to drive solutions to, again, get that speed to market.
Yeah, having that open door handoff, right, to where taking the architect's design and the engineering of making sure digitally and it's the systems all are going to work before you move into the construction, right? And then how does pre-construction factor in this from your point of view? Because there's a lot of talk, I think, when you're starting to put all these acronyms together about what we call in the system build master facilitators, the digital build and the physical build. It's really putting more work on the front end and utilizing so many cool technologies and lessons learned like we've been discussing. But from your point of view, how does pre-construction really factor into this?
Yeah, so there's a couple things there. Number one is the pre-construction team has to work with the design team early on so that we understand, all right, what are we trying to do here? And, you know, from a like a prefabrication modularization standpoint, what, you know, what do we want to do in order to execute this as quickly as possible? And who are, and we got to identify who our trade partners are that we are going to align with.
Totally.
Who can execute things in this fashion. You know, if we've got a sophisticated design, you can't just go out to the lowest bidder. It's got to be the best qualified bidder. And we have, you know, I may have used the word trade partner in my diatribes here, but we don't call contractors or subcontractors subcontractors. They're our trade partners. We're, again, just like we're an integrated AECM team, the contractors are part of that integrated team. So,
and you have to think, and that's a key thing, that that's what we're really driving home on the Art of Construction is, you know, what we call our system built lifestyle, putting all this together is like to do proper prefabrication and modularization that you guys are working on. You got to start way at the beginning, and the kit of parts is different than just a lower bidder. I think that's super important, and that's getting the mindsets to shift to say the finished result is so much faster and speed to market, which saves time, which is more important than money sometimes, and it's a better product of the life cycle. That's what I'm hearing from you of the key thing of day zero, as you talk about, right, Tom?
Yeah, and again, it's right. It's the beginning with the end in mind. The other thing is, too, is you know, the pre-con team is instrumental in taking those early design concepts and setting up the project with a target, you know, a target value. One of the things I don't know that if you guys have talked about it here is that, you know, target value delivery or target value design. The customer has a dollar value in mind. You know, we're trying to do this fast. We're trying to do it good, but we got to control the cost as well. And you got to set that target early.
Right.
The pre-con team's instrumental in that. And they're working again, working with trade partners, to get, you know, to kind of
to create the best value to the target. Detail. Right. And I love, we actually just in the master facilitator community, shout out to Shelby Ashley, where we just did a whole thing about, you know, the difference between your CFO and your accountant and cash is king. And she, one of my big aha moments where she talked about, she's like, I don't really like to use the word budget. I like to use the word target, because the connotation of certain things of when you hear the word, well, my budget is this, everybody goes right into, well, what's their real target? Meaning everybody's trying to undercut because they know construction is delayed and over budget, right? So getting real targets and benchmarks, and that's why there's this stigmatism, in my opinion, of modular as well, because it's like, it just should be cheaper. Well, no, it's not about just being cheaper. It's about the life cycle of the project, and you have to blend on-site and off-site construction. That's where you have to have a vertically integrated partner like Genesis that has their sub partners or the master facilitators all working together. Are we rowing in the same direction of what you're articulating there?
A thousand percent. And, you know, when you're looking at the costs, you got to look at the overall costs and what are some of the risks inherent to the budget and to the costs. And, you know, when you're looking at something that's going to be prefabricated, well, there might be a little bit more upfront costs, but you don't have to worry about rework because there's going to be a much higher quality program. And the
you mean know, it might cost more upfront if you take the whole kit of parts and just crane it into place and it's actually matched up into the whole overall project versus dumping it in the driveway and whatever manufactured there on site? Because that's what I like to just keep hitting us to think about. But we got to be smart about these analogies and trade-offs of like, you wouldn't build your car in the driveway. Well, you may put a different exhaust or something depending on the situation of blending these different things. And in each project, that's why you need to have experts like Genesis who are vertically integrated enough. The thing I wanted to really hit on, Tom, is what I see a lot of this time of the early adopters on innovation is you've got to have the right targets for innovation to do stuff differently. Is EPCM only for large projects in companies, or is it scalable at different? What's your point of view on that?
No, absolutely not. It's absolutely. I mean, we have projects that range in the $500,000 range all the way up to $300 million. And, you know, it's just all you're scaling is the size of the team.
And I would challenge the resources, right? Like the bigger project needs more resources, but I totally agree with your answer. But we got to think about system building at all levels, not just if they have a huge budget, right? We got to change our target methodologies instead of it only for those large projects. But you guys, I love how you're saying the brackets of the numbers you're working on are very broad, right?
Yeah. And, you know, from an EPCM standpoint, you know, that it works, you know, throughout the scale. When you're, you know, when we're talking about, you know, kind of prefabrication, well, that's going to depend on the logistics and the size of the project. If you're doing something where you're making some small upgrades in a lab, in an existing lab or something, well, prefabrication might not work for that because you just got to come in and, you know, maybe you're going to move some utilities around and it's a kind of a quick and dirty project. But if it's a large scale renovation or a new building out of the ground, well, then you better be thinking about everything that you want to bring as little to the site as possible. And what I mean by that is be as efficient as possible when you're building, minimize, you know, the wastes within the construction execution. You know, utilize just-in-time deliveries. Don't have, you know, gang boxes full of materials sitting around that are just, you know, parts and pieces that may or may not be needed for that particular job, but, you know, they had a gang box full of conduit and here it is, we'll throw it over into this space. And if they need it, they need it. If not, we'll put it back in the shop.
Totally. So can you talk through for companies who are considering EPCM for the first time, what are some of the most important factors they should consider when selecting an EPCM firm like Genesis?
Yep. So the biggest thing is time, right? Like time is probably the most valuable thing that we have. So a lot of people are kind of focused on, you know, what's the cost and what's the schedule? Well, the schedule, we're going to be able to compress the schedule. And with that compressed schedule, the costs may come down. The cost will come down. You got your resource, you're utilizing your resources in less time. And it's, you know, it's kind of getting people to stop thinking about, you know, the architect has to be separate from the engineer, has to be, you know, getting that integrated team and getting them working together. We can start with a preliminary design. You bring in the trade partners, the guys who installed in the field, get their feedback, help speed that design and coordination process up. You save a lot of time on that front end. And then if you can, the more things you can come up with, anything modular or prefabricated that you can then get into the field and assemble it in the field quicker, you know, each one of these things is compounding to a much more compressed schedule. So it's really, and it's time, and it's that time is essential because of the speed to market, right? We live in the life science world. Speed to market is so important. So, you know, it's stressing the importance of the schedule, although not every project is schedule driven, but it's proven that we can improve the schedule. And a lot of times that leads to less cost.
Cool. At the beginning, I talked about where I wanted you to talk about a successful project, because that was one of the things I was so excited about hearing your story, Tom, is that you've spent a few days, some of the days can be long, but the years are short, of living the art of construction. Can you talk about a successful EPCM project and kind of just talk about the cradle to cradle process that it went through?
Yeah. So, there's one in particular that we are just wrapping up for one of our clients. It's actually the largest project that we've ever done. It's close to a $300 million project. And from the beginning, this project's been a long time in the works. There were a lot of things that, you know, sort of prevented the project from moving forward. The biggest hurdle being two of the facilities in which we were working in are in operations 24/7. So it's figuring out all of the shutdown coordinations, figuring out where, you know, there's labs that are in use 24 hours that you got to create swing space to move some of the lab operations into so that we can work in certain areas and then swing them back over. Part of this project was a new building coming out of the ground adjacent to an existing building that was in operations. We had to on one of the existing laboratory buildings, we had to put a tower crane on the roof in order to put HVAC equipment, ductwork, piping, all up onto the roof that was previously, you know, in the penthouse below. We were replacing most of the HVAC system in this building. A second substation because we couldn't shut down existing electrical gear in the one building. And the coordination nightmare behind that, but that all of that coordination involved everyone, the architects, the engineers, the construction team, the trade partners, to work together early on to figure out, okay, how are we going to do this? And, you know, the planning stages for this project started in 2018, 2019. In 2019, the project was, you know, approved to move forward. And since 2020, we've been, you know, kind of surgically executing the project. We went through a global pandemic.
I was going to say something happened in the middle of that.
Yeah. And we had, you know, everybody else was basically off of the site except for, you know, the lab workers, the people in manufacturing and our construction folks. And, you know, we kept it moving. We kept the project on schedule. You know, there was certainly some hiccups and hurdles along the road, but we worked together to get through those. There was, you know, there were plenty of times where I was sitting with the lead architects and we, you know, we had an issue on one of our buildings where him and I had to kind of sit together for a solid day to try and figure out, okay, how are we going to fix this? And, you know, what's the overall impact? You know, we came to a resolution and it was, you know, minimal impact, but it was because, you know, he and I worked together. We worked well together coming up with a solution for a firewall to separate the building that didn't impact the overall square footage of the building because we had, you know, as part of that target value, we only had so much room to work with, not only because we were trying to keep the building as small as possible and kind of, you know, control the wants versus the needs, but the physical limitations of the space in which we were putting this facility
and forcing the integrated approach versus just go on the site and figure it out like so much is done. And then somebody comes up and says, it's not going to work and tears it all apart. And then you're in this massive, you know, wasting time and money over and over again.
Exactly.
So it's taking the right master facilitators when you need to lock yourself in a room as a vertically integrated approach and say, this is what we got to do to have the whole team continue to be successful. And those are those times that are the critical moments on a project that breaks through the ceiling, but you have to be scaled and integrated enough to actually be able to take, to have a person who knows enough about the project to solve the specific problem, right?
Yeah. And look, you know, a lot of it is working together with the other disciplines, work and you know, understanding that the construction team isn't always right. The engineers aren't always right. The architect isn't always right.
Totally.
But we, you know, we listen and respect each other that, okay, if this solution works and we all, you know, if somebody dissents and, you know, really is adamant against it, then we'll go back and try and understand, okay, why?
Yeah. And the statement, we all say it, agree to disagree, but I think that's the wrong statement. It's like, agree to say, what is the best value for this decision to keep this moving along? Like that's the golden nugget here. I think we're talking about, it's not that I'm right and you're wrong. It's saying, okay, what is the best decision as the team to hit the targets that we've been talking about through this fireside chat?
Yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. And sometimes it's just, it's, you know, putting your ego aside and saying, okay, you know what? This is the best path forward. That's what we're going to do.
And if it's wrong, it's not just belittling people. It's saying, okay, you always have to be ready to pivot a little bit to move it forward. That's what construction is all about, is about, we're all compromising together. But if we are actually executing from a vertically integrated model, that is what everybody agrees to, it changes the actual construction in such a good way. If the pre-construction and the owners and everybody actually is agreeing before you actually go do it, versus they build it and then they go out there and say, this isn't what I want. Well, that's really hard to pivot at that point.
Right. Yeah. And usually if it's wrong, I wind up saying, see, I told you so.
There we go. That's the real part. And that's the part of, like, we call our joke of the new master facilitator community is we say We're not the MFers that you think of in construction. We're the master facilitators, because there's a lot of people that I was just listening to the Contact Crew the other day of, like, how the old school people were brought up in the construction industry of, like, the school of hard knocks, and like the psychology of this stuff is really shedding a lot of light when you actually see how a lot of the stuff is done in the past. Right. So it's like,
right. Like, hey, all right, look, we're the first ones in here. We're getting all of our stuff first. We're getting it in, getting out, and we're, you know, getting it in, getting it done, and getting it out and getting paid.
Right.
And, you know, it was time was money. Yeah. Right. So you had, you know, that's why a lot of guys who went from, you know, foreman to superintendents, those were guys that could push their crews to get done fast. And that's how they were rewarded, by just get it done as quick as possible and get out.
Right.
And you know, we got to have a little bit of a different mindset where there's a lot of coordination, especially in life science, because of the complexities 100%. Of the
system.
That's
exactly what I was going to say next. Of the focus, like, we commend Genesis for looking at life science, because that's such a, with all the carbon and all the, like, the stuff that you guys, like, what the people you're catering to and what they're doing in these buildings, there's a lot of complexity there of being able, from the life cycle of that. So you have to be integrated to be able to, where it's, you know, AI and the movement of all this stuff in what you guys focus on when it comes to pharma. That's a big deal, right?
Right.
I'm kind of teeing that up as we're working towards kind of closing this thing out, is the question we always ask, and I'm super jazzed for your answer, Tom. And as we were getting to know each other, you hit a lot of crystal balls because you've been doing this for a while, but you're also, like, in this cool, you know, I love when I get to talk to VPs who have, like, worked their way up, but they're really thinking about this crystal ball of, like, how do we break through the ceiling together? Right. And so I'm very curious, Tom, what are some of your bullet points when I ask you the question, is what is your crystal ball for the future with technology and construction?
Yeah. So to kind of look forward, you got to look back a little bit. Right. And productivity in construction has been relatively flat over the past 50 years, despite all of these technological advances that we have. We're going into, you know, what is becoming the fourth industrial revolution, where we've got artificial intelligence. You know, we're looking at robotics. So I think it's it's starting to embrace those technologies and using them to our advantage, rather than, you know, having that old school mentality of
tech is tech.
We don't need to do it that way. Right. We don't need to do it that way. Let's this is how we've always done things, that we're going to, this is how we're going to keep doing it. Well, that, you know, that doesn't make sense. And I think there's a lot more people that are, you know, embracing that and embracing technology, right, and how, and understanding the ways in which that can help speed construction and engineering projects up, you know, things like artificial intelligence to generate, you know, kind of quick designs that you, that the engineering team can then use to test fit spaces.
Yeah, we just did a second podcast with Bill Allen of Evolve Lab, where his, you know, Veris AI, where you can just take a picture and it gives you as many renderings to just move that visual representation down the line faster, which in the past, that was a big time spend, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you know, a lot of time and resources to do that. You've got, you know, multiple entities with their fingers in, you know, in that design, trying to figure out, all right, how are we going to lay this out? Yep. Where is this going to go?
Yep.
Well, you can have that done quickly and then bring everybody in and say, okay, now what do we need to make this work? You know, advancements in robotics, the, you know, exoskeletons. I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of the exoskeletons where that they help kind of prevent injuries. And then, you know, the embracing of prefabrication, you know, again, that goes back to limiting injuries. You're putting people in a position where they're more ergonomically able to execute their work. And not only is that a safer way to do it, it's a faster way to do it, because, you know, you're not wasting time by trying to work overhead. You know, I've worked as a sheet metal worker. Do you know how much of a pain in the butt it is to work overhead while you got a piece of ductwork hanging up over your head and you're reaching up and you're trying to screw hangers in? And, you know, it's so much easier when it's on a table right in front of you.
Love it. Yeah. What's really cool to hear is, like, I've been running this podcast for many years. And at the beginning, when you'd say the word robots, and you wouldn't see great firms like Genesis talking about that stuff. Now it's really cool to hear the master facilitators like Genesis that has all this are saying, this is something we're really leaning into, that it's ready for prime time. That's exciting stuff, right? Like, because a lot of it just takes time to adopt and figure out and figure that. So I love that that these conversations are really moving forward, and especially the embracement of prefabrication, of blending on-site and off-site construction with a vertical integrated kit of parts. Like, that truly is, as you said, the industrial 4.0 revolution. Like, that truly is where it is, but you have to vertically integrate more to be able to make that happen. You can't just, who's the lowest bid and kick the can down the line. That just doesn't work that way.
Right.
So as we work to close this thing out, Tom, what is the one thing our master facilitators, the builders and affiliates that are out there crushing it, that you've been highlighting in such a great way, what is the one thing you want to leave everybody listening to go out there and crush it and grow their business?
Yeah, so that's, you know, the search for continuous improvement. Embrace change and don't just do something because, you know, that's the way it's always been done. It works. We've always done it this way. And earlier you had given a car example about, you know, getting, you know, your car basically in parts in the driveway and putting it together. I've got another car example. So if you look at, like, F1 pit stops from the 1990s up until now. So in the 1990s, they had pit stops. They were about 8 seconds. Right now in F1, when they have a pit stop, it's about 1.8 to 2 seconds. You would have thought in 1998 seconds was good enough to change tires and gas it up. Now they got it down to 1.8 seconds, which was unfathomable in 1990. Mm-hmm. But it's because they were constantly looking for ways to do it better and you know, embracing those. You know, maybe somebody had a crazy idea of, hey, let's have just one lug nut on the wheel, and we'll have it attached to the wheel. And, you know, there's always that, you know, thinking outside of the box and embracing that way of thinking and looking for ways to always improve.
You know, that is such a mic drop moment, because I've heard so many car analogies, but what you talked about, and we talk about how to get to the NASCAR circuit. Not every driver, not every pit crew leader just starts in NASCAR. You have to have a passion and you have to drive towards being able to get to F1 NASCAR, to the top of the game, right? And you talked about that, of your you know, your time of working to get to the VP level. But the thing about the race car drivers, there's a kit of parts or a rules of the game that are determined to start to work your way up to that. And I think at the end of the day, that's what you and I are talking about here, Tom, is just saying, like, I've been saying over and over with these podcasts is we got to figure out in our global megaphone to niche in to say you got to meet the people, the businesses, and most importantly, the municipalities to change the rules of the game so that when you're pulling into the pit crew, that area is a defined thing of what you're doing to service that car to keep it going, just like we got to figure out how to service that building downstream and move all that stuff together. So I really like that analogy in addition to, because we all have to be relatable to this stuff, right? Of why they did that. So any final words that you want to put us out there to put out there? I really appreciate that analogy and sharing your story. And part two of Genesis, we Art of Construction's honored to be affiliates with you all and help share your amazing story.
I really appreciate it, Devin. Thanks. Thank you for having me on. Just thank you, Tribe, for listening. And I'll stay in touch with the Art of Construction and continued success on your podcast, because it's great.
Awesome. Yeah, we'll make sure we get you access into the Master Facilitator community. And anybody who's listening, that's why we're doing this, because construction is not a one-sentence thing. A lot of people listen and move on. I challenge everybody to stop and pause and come and reflect and then come back to Tom and I and let's have a conversation of how we can break through the ceiling together as master facilitators, one project at a time, building better buildings. Thanks, Tom. Crush it out there, Tribe.